Mr. Lewin in Reel 12. Right, Mr. Lewin, we're talking about sport and the officers versus sergeants football game. So, when can you remember the first of these? Would that be?
The first one. Well, the first one I played in was, when we was abroad.
So it was after you went to North Africa?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that incident then. So, in terms of sports in England, you had quite a developed system for football in terms of fixtures and so on.
Oh yeah, we did the best we could. Yeah.
And were you able to socialise with the opposing teams after the game?
Yes.
So what would you do after the game?
Well, it wasn't really very much. We couldn't entertain them very much. We probably give them something to eat or something like that, but at least we'd sort of get together and maybe have a drink or something like that.
And would the discipline of the army, where you'd have, you know, sergeants, corporals and so on, how would that translate onto the football pitch?
It was non-existent. When that didn't exist. Oh no, if you were in, you were in, that side, it didn't matter. You were all the same.
So a good sergeant or a good officer would just have to play the game?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's the same as when Thomason played in the, if you were playing in the battalion team and Thomason was playing, he wouldn't in any way use his position, his rank in any shape or form, and if you wanted to have a go at him, you there was no reason why you shouldn't.
But did you ever have a situation where you'd have, let's say, a sergeant and another rank putting in a pretty brutal tackle or something like that? Would that be?
Well, not really.
Or the other way around, like people being afraid to tackle.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. Everything else was forgotten once you were just concentrating on what you were doing, really.
So, you've moved to Folkestone by this stage. About what time was that, do you think?
What time of the year?
Yeah, or what time of the war?
Well, it would be in the... about in the middle part of the year, I should imagine. I think it was pretty, the weather was pretty good.
And this was in 1941?
I don't know what the year was. I suppose it would be.
So what happened there? What happened at Folkestone?
Oh, we went into... Folkestone, that was at Shorncliffe Barracks. Yeah, now that was different again, you see, because we come from Norfolk, and when we went to Shorncliffe, Shorncliffe was the name of the barracks. The name of the actual district there was Sheraton, but that was at just at the top of the hill out of Folkestone. Shorncliffe Barracks was just a series of buildings. They were not Nissen huts, but they were a little bit bigger than Nissen huts, and they were sort of half brick and half asbestos sort of thing. I think there were beds in there. There was. Now, the main reason, I don't really know. But it dawned on me when we were there. Really, I wondered about the purpose of going there at all. Because although we were in striking distance of the the small arms training school down in Hythe. There was a battle course that was down in Hythe. There were two other training establishments. That was the only reason why I could see that we were sent there to take advantage of places like that, because whilst we were in Shorncliffe, they did send a few people to the battle school, but that was an individual. Sometimes they went in groups, but mainly it was individual. That people were going, they were going individually, or maybe in twos. And
did you go?
I went to. No, I never went to the battle school, but I went and I did a course at. I was asked if I wanted to do a course on with the, you know, when they take the, when you're firing the 3-inch mortars, and you're using the rangefinder. Well, the mortars had their own people for that, and they didn't need me for that.
They didn't need you for that, so continue.
They didn't need me for that, so. But I said, would I like to go on this one? I said, yes, I would, because it interested me, you know, I'd like to. Because I thought to myself, I'd find out how to. And so I went to the small arms school, and they, together with another bloke who was in the mortars.
Who was that?
And his name was. I got friendly with him because whenever I was on leave, he took over from me. His surname is Barber, and strangely enough, his Christian name, well, I always used to call him Lou Barber. I don't know what that Lou stood for, but anyway, I went with him on this course. That's the only time I personally went. I found that was quite interesting.
And what happened then on the course?
Oh, well, we used to go there. We went there, and they used to take us out, and we used to have to go with the mortar detachments, you know, and onto the range, and because they could use the live ammunition as well. And we could find out the ranges for them. We could know how right and how wrong we were then. It was quite interesting.
And that was using a special device?
Yeah, I have a special thing. You've got to use two hands and look in the thing. It's quite interesting. That was my own choice, you know.
And so, in terms of the battalion's training, had you moved towards live ammunition now then in your, or was that still just on the ranges?
No, that's only on the ranges, only on the firing ranges.
So you were more or less in the front line in Folkestone. Didn't have any memories of air raids at this time?
No, they didn't. Not all the time we were at Folkestone, I don't remember that we had an air raid. In fact, it wasn't an air raid. It was only a single German plane, and that was a Rye. Well, that was the first time that.
What was that? What happened then?
Well, that was when we were stationed at Rye. Yeah. Well, that was a single plane. By that time, we were ready. We were actually, the time I'm talking about, it was just before we moved from Rye. It was about 2 or 3 weeks before we moved from Rye. And by that time, I'd left the headquarters company and I'd gone down and joined this reinforcement company. Mm.
Oh, well, we'll talk about that then. But
that's when the plane came over.
What actually happened with the plane before?
What did happen?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then, what happened was that we were, one morning, it was about dinner time, I think, we went out on the route march in the morning, just after dinner, I think, and we were billeted. We were billeted in at that time, all of us were billeted in this Mermaid Street in Rye, which was a, as I've told you about before, I think, the one with the gay coloured houses and the cobbled streets, and it's a tourist attraction place. Anyway, we were billeted up there, and this plane came over, and we'd only just got back from this route march, and we was halted in the road. He dropped a bomb, just dropped a single bomb, and it fell right smack on the cinema, flattened the cinema, and that was at the bottom of Mermaid Street. We just turned in. That was our first, that was the first time that we'd met an angry German or anything like it.
So that was the first time really that you
come under fire.
Well, was that a fighter plane or was it a bomber?
It was a fighter bomber. They shot it down, and it was shot down, and it went made for the coast, and they shot it down just off the coast of Hastings. Pretty far from Hastings there, you see.
But it's so go back to Folkestone. Folkestone, really, you haven't really no memories of enemy air attack?
No, we didn't have anything at Folkestone. No, nothing there. No, it wasn't a bad time at Folkestone because, as I say, we were quite comfortable.
And were you able to socialise with the locals?
Yeah, we found that was quite good. Quite good for that. We there were a couple of cinemas in Folkestone, and there was a famous Leedcliff Hall down in the cliffs there. That was good. There was always plenty on there. It was quite good at Folkestone, but we had I would like to say, I suppose, I said a couple of months, that would be about the lot, I should think, at Folkestone. It was okay at Folkestone in one way, because although we were well out of the town, we were right up on the hill, you see, but the barracks were way out, somewhere a little way out of town. But at least, you could get about, and all the roads were tarmacked and everything, so it was reasonable to get about, and the bullets were good. But they concentrated a lot on coming back to the drilling and that a bit more, because what with doing the exercises and things, that sort of tended to take the back seat, you see, and then so Thomason came into his own at Folkestone, because that was all right. He used to have a once a week there used to be the whole battalion would parade, and Thomason would take the parade, and that was it. And that was.
So he was a spit and polish man.
Oh, that's right. He really loved that. Yeah.
Well, what did you feel about the amount of spit and polish that you had to do as a soldier?
Well,
at this stage? Did you think it was a waste of time, or did you think was there some value to it?
I did at one time. I did at one time, but then.
When was that?
Well, for instance, that spell at Folkestone, because once you got up to standard, if you've got your kit and everything up to standard, you weren't doing manoeuvres and things like that, so you didn't get dirty and scruffy, you never really allowed it to get bad, you see. You used to keep an eye on it. And even things like your second pair of boots and all that, with your guard duties and things like that, you wouldn't really let them get that bad. But I didn't mind it too much at Folkestone. I thought it was pretty reasonable. He started to crack the whip a bit, Thomason did.
How did he do that?
Well, he for instance, we were in this, it was a barracks after all, and he brought in things like the buglers. Well, they made it, they even got people down, some buglers down from Bransworth. Came and they joined us. They were even posted to the battalion. I can remember the name of the one. One bloke was a Corporal Berry. He was a pretty good bugler as well. But Thomason got, he was the one who did that.
So what are the they would, what were they?
Well, he used to do the reveille and the lights out and that sort of thing.
And you hadn't had that before, to the same
extent? We hadn't had it before.
Not at all?
No, because there wasn't much point, really, because, see, it was okay at Folkestone, because for a start, the battalion was all together. We weren't dispersed like we had been before.
Did you feel at this stage, now that you were all together, that you were an efficient battalion,
I thought so.
So at this stage you were more confident about your soldierly abilities as a unit?
I didn't really think that far ahead, and I began thinking more that way when we got to Rye, because I very quickly found out that the purpose of going to Rye, there's nothing clever about that. There wasn't anything clever about that, and what I thought I just said. But looking back, I can see that was a pretty cute move.
In what way?
Well, it was a cute move. The battalion wasn't together. We were dispersed at Rye as badly as we had been in the past, really. But the difference was that by this time, everything was all the problems, most of the problems had been sorted, most of them. The biggest problems, I suppose, had been the specialist platoons, and that wasn't our fault. That was because that in the early stages we had to wait quite a long time for various sort of equipment and transport, which we couldn't get, but which we did get eventually, and once that got through, we were pretty well up to, we were pretty well ready.
So at Rye, you made the move there. You said the battalion was dispersed.
Yeah, well,
where was it dispersed to, and who was dispersed where?
Well, you had two companies. You had two companies at Winchelsea, at C and D, and B Company was slightly out of Rye, going towards Camber Sands. A Company was in Rye. Battalion headquarters was in Rye. And Headquarter Company was in Rye as well. But we, Headquarter Company, we were at the top of the hill. We were on the outskirts of Rye. We were billeted in the workhouse. Now I could see the sense in that move as well as time went on. I could see the logic there. That would have been well planned then.
Anyway, what was the logic?
Well, the thing was that we that the people that mattered must have known that the most important thing for the specialist platoons anyway was to get use of the equipment, such as use of the mortars, the carriers, and the signal platoon, and all that. They knew that by keeping these people together, they were able to keep the communications right. But don't forget that everybody was in. I could get in touch with Peter Griffin in Winchelsea by listening to a field telephone, right? But that was all down, that sort of thing was down to the signal platoon.
So really the fact that you were dispersed made you have to learn, or made you have to have those lines of communication?
Well, we had to have them. But that was the same, that was a story all the way through, really. The signals, I mean, in Rye.
So you had a field telephone line laid from Rye to Winchelsea?
Yeah, because the signals had a switchboard. I could get on the field telephone where I was in the workhouse and talk to Frank Reynolds down in Rye on the switchboard at 7 o'clock in the evenings, as you might say. But that it was possible, you see. But that was all done by the signal platoon, that was. I mean, but as I'm saying, you could see the way those works it all out, that all the platoons came together and like that. And then they were gradually coming more and more and working together, you know.
But in terms of the battalion, you'd be dispersed, so...
Well, the battalion was dispersed, exactly.
So would you say much of the men in the rifle companies?
Not really, not all that much. I mean, if I saw anybody, I mean, for instance, as I say, C and D Company were in Winchelsea. Well, the only time I ever went to Winchelsea was if I wanted to... if I had a bad toothache and I wanted to see the dentist, or if I reported sick, or if I had to go and have an inoculation.
Because something else was at Winchelsea, what was that? You said C and D, so what you've said, obviously some of the medical facilities were there.
Well, the thing was that the C and D companies were in Winchelsea, but so was the RAP,
RAP stands for
medical regimental aid post.
So that was at Winchelsea as well.
Yeah, but you see, the thing was, if you went, as I'm saying, if you wanted to go sick, you would have to go to Winchelsea. Even if you were like I was in Rye, I would have to go to Winchelsea.
And would there be transport laid on?
Oh yeah.
Now we've talked a little bit earlier about some of the big schemes, and you said that. One of the big schemes was during this period at Rye,
yeah,
when you had a march along distance.
There was one outstanding one that I remember.
That's one
that went on it, yeah.
Could that have been Exercise Harold? Does that name ring a bell?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm not quite sure.
But it was definitely a big scheme when you were at Rye.
It was a big one. Yeah, it was a big one.
Is there anything else about that scheme because other veterans have talked about cooperation with the Canadians? Do you have any contact with the Canadian troops that were in the area? Apparently, you did some schemes where you were.
I don't know about that.
No memories, no personal memories.
No.
And no. Apparently, again, while you were at Rye, towards the end of your time there, there was a big field firing exercise down at Plumpton, which involved live ammunition and artillery barrages and so on.
Where?
At Plumpton Racecourse, near Brighton. That doesn't ring a bell.
No, I don't know. Don't know about that. Right.
What about recreation at Rye?
Rye wasn't all that big a place, really. Well, there was only the one cinema until we had the German plane. There wasn't anything else really at Rye.
What about drinking pubs?
Oh, there were some pubs there, yeah. Yeah, Yes, Harry Stern was well known in Rye. Yes.
So he was a good drinker.
Oh yeah, Harry was, yeah. Yes, because Harry, as I say, I told you, he went back to the Mortar pursuit. Because Harry was billeted in the same place as me. He was in the workhouse, you see, with the Mortar pursuit. Yeah, he was there. He was quite a character. I saw Harry, you know, after the war. It's quite by luck, it's quite right. I'd lost my way. I was in somewhere in the outskirts of London, and I'd lost my way. And I was driving a van at the time, and so I stopped at a small factory. And I thought to myself, well, I'll ask him. I could see somebody with a big towel in a little box by the gate. So I went there, and there was Harry Stern. Would you believe it?
So what did he say? What did you say?
Well, you can believe he knew me straight away. Yeah.
Did he go abroad with you?
Yeah, he did, yeah. Oh, yeah. But he must have had an early release, because, you see, he came back, he would have had a pretty low release number, Harry would, because of his age. I'm pretty sure of that.
Now, going back to Rye, the battalion history talks about the battalion dance band. Can you remember anything about
it? Yeah, there was the band. Yeah, there was an Harry, I'd have to get his name now. As a matter of fact, he was Major Ellison's driver. The very bloke I'm trying to... It was him who started that. He used to play the piano. When we used to have a concert, Harry, whatever his name was, we used to play the piano.
Was the good dance band? Was he a good piano player?
Yeah, it was okay. Yeah, I think. Yeah, it was okay. They started to have a bloke who did a lot towards that was not towards the band, but he saw to it that that they got a certain amount of that support, like from the people who matter, and that was a bloke who, well, they called him, his name was Captain Ponder, Captain Ponder, and he was, if you look in the records, I think he was described as a PRI. Well, that stood for President of the Regimental Institute. Well, that more or less means NAFI. Because you have to remember, at the time I'm talking about, there were no such things as NAFI rations. So he used to, this Captain Ponder used to get supplies of cigarettes and this, that and the other. And that was broadly it. And because he became interested in this with this dance band business, and he was very supportive of them, because they couldn't find anybody to give them a bit of a hand really. But he did a lot.
So he worked with.
Well, he worked with this.
I know he
was Major Ellison's driver, I do remember that. His name was Harry or something. And he used to drive the PU often, and then when it came, the Jeep. But I can't remember his name. But he used to always play the piano at the battalion concerts when they used to have the people who used to do the turns. Duffy used to do a turn, Harry Stern used to do a turn.